There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
This is our last grill of 2018, and that's why we're having a bit of an ease up. A little look back at some of the big stories of the week, some big stories of the year as well, as we look back at the year in sport 2018, and of course look ahead to some huge games. Chelsea against Leicester is our feature game at 7 o'clock. United are down at Cardiff. That's also live here on Dubai Eye 103.8 at 9:30 this evening. And in between all that, just down the road in Abu Dhabi, Al Ain taking on Real Madrid. To see who will be crowned the FIFA Club World Cup Champions 2018. Let's get to some of the live scores for you. Let's go to the Premier League. CVR's watching Arsenal against Burnley.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you is a fantastic start by Burnley, but it's the home side that is on top. A 14-minute goal by Aubameyang for Arsenal. Arsenal leading that fixture 1-0, 38 minutes played in the first half.
What's going on elsewhere over in La Liga? Real Betis are taking on Eibar in the early kickoff over there. Antonio Sanabria is the only scorer thus far, scored on 20. Now into the second half of that game, 47 minutes on the clock in that particular game. And over in Italy, a very early kickoff there. They're into the 84th minute as we speak, and Lazio well in control against Cagliari. It is Lazio 3, Cagliari 0. Milinkovic, Savic, Acerbi and Lulic with the three goals for Lazio. Right. Opportunity for us now as we get ready for some big games in the Gallagher Prem, the Guinness Pro 14, and of course the Top 14 a little later on, to look back at some of the highlights of the year when it comes to the world of rugby.
Perfect throw to Bowden Barrett. And a nice little kick through, and it sits up. Nice hands there from Bowden Barrett. Looking for somebody, can't find them. Now he pops it up. Here's Bowden Barrett. Oh, gee. The pass. Here he is again, Brady Retella. Here he is, Bowden Barrett.
Would free the arms, though. Bowden Barrett. Saw again. Off he goes. Now can he link up? He's back to his own pace. Oh, gee whiz. That is magic.
That is magic.
Very quick ball, and the clerk gets it away. Jesse Freeland going hard.
Back to clear. Some of the defensive work there from the little nine were outstanding.
First opportunity for the crowd to roar his nickname. And Tollard goes to the line, beats the second man. Gets the clear.
What a great support by New York.
This try scoring machine.
Oh boy, that's a good try.
Terrific finish from the All Blacks. They're ruthless in that department.
Too much pace.
Enrico Iolani will canter into the corner.
From this breakdown, he shifts it quickly.
Strong and physical ball in hand, gets over the gate line every time he has it in his feet.
So some of the highlights of the year for 2018. Obviously 2019 is going to be a big one for the world of rugby. 2018, what did we learn? CVR.
2018, we learned that the All Blacks can be beaten, Tom, and I think that's a big story of 2018. I think going into 2019, that's really put a positive spin on rugby. To me, rugby in a very, very healthy state at this moment. The Springboks under huge, huge pressure. Rassie Erasmus came in. Of course, not quite the season the Springboks wanted, but beating the All Blacks in New Zealand for the first time in 10 years, I think, showing that the All Blacks do have faltered. And to me, the team of the year so far has been Ireland. I think they've been absolutely fantastic. They've been inspirational. And then finally, the first time in the history of Irish rugby, getting that victory on the year-end tour over the All Blacks, to me, was a major, major highlight.
Well, they were voted the team of the year at the IRB end-of-term gala. They were the 2018 team of the year. And one of their linchpins, one of their go-tos, was named the IRB Rugby Player of the Year. Johnny Sexton got it for doing, well, this and more.
The winner of the 2018 World Rugby Men's 15th Player of the Year Award in association with MasterCard is Johnny Sexton.
Do you want to explain why you've come to speak on behalf of the World Player of the Year?
Yeah, well, Johnny's got too big time now to talk for himself, so I'm up here to speak for him. But seriously, Johnny lost his voice this evening. So Johnny has put a few things down here that I will read out. So thank you to my teammates and coaches. If a number 10 wins awards like this...
He's had a text that's just come through. Do you want to read that out?
I want to read that one too. If a number 10 wins an award like this, it is due to the team around him and his coaches making his job easier. We have some of the best coaches in the world and are led superbly by me and Pete.
You started writing this yourself.
Also, would like to thank my wife Laura, who has been with me since the start. We have three young kids and she does absolutely everything to allow me to concentrate on the day job. I wouldn't have been able to have the season I had without her. Thank you so much. It is an incredible honour. I look at the other nominees and admire all of them. Any of them would have been a worthy winner.
Beautifully put. Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time ever, a speechless Johnny Sexton for the World Rugby Player of the Year in association with MasterCard. Thoroughly deserved.
Cheers.
I mentioned that we have got grillers, past and present, joining us throughout proceedings for this, our final show of the year. Mark Archer stopped by. He heard us talking all things rugby and said, hang on. I can't have a talk of rugby in 2018 without putting the case forward for New Zealand. Heard there from CVR about sort of a changing of the guard almost to a certain degree. I mean, that was reflected to a certain degree, was it not, by the fact that all the three big awards at that dinner, Team of the Year, Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, went to Ireland.
Merry Christmas, Tom, and listeners. Yeah, no, great to be down here talking rugby. Yeah, look, I think Ireland were undoubtedly the team of the year. They dominated the Six Nations, albeit the Six Nations is such a tight competition that they got up with that last-minute drop goal from Johnny to defeat France, I think, and then they were the team to beat. And to get that historic victory against the All Blacks in Dublin, in Ireland, for the first time ever, of course, they beat them a couple of years ago in Chicago, was fantastic. And such a well-drilled team. Leinster have been dominant in Europe, so it shows that the structures are right, not just at the national team level. The coaching systems throughout the provinces is extremely strong, and they were fantastic. So well-deserved to Ireland, and they are the team, you know, in many people's regards, the team to beat in next year's Rugby World Cup.
Sulfur Khan still with us as well. Loves his rugby as he does his football. Good year for rugby?
Absolutely. I'm surprised Archer didn't mention the fact that Ireland were coached by a Kiwi. He's probably mentioned that on previous occasions.
Most teams in Northern Hemisphere are coached by Kiwis.
There we go.
Zulf.
As echo what Carl said a little bit earlier in the show, fantastic year for rugby because that gap has narrowed. And I think the key positions in the All Black team haven't been filled out, and they've all those caps that they've lost has helped the other teams get a little bit closer. I don't think you can replace Dan Carter. I don't think you can replace Richie McCaw. I don't think you can replace Jerome Kano overnight. And what's that done is it's made rugby a lot more interesting going into the 2019 World Cup. South Africa did well in New Zealand. England should have beaten the All Blacks at home. Ireland did a really good job of stifling the All Blacks at home, but they're still the team to beat. If you had to put down favourites for 2019 World Cup, this team scored 78 tries, average 40 points a game, except on the Northern Hemisphere tour. They're still the team to beat.
We can't get through a chat of the year that was without mentioning America, because obviously they hosted a big rugby event for the first time in the World Cup of Seven, San Francisco, earlier on this year. But they've also very much nailed their colours to the mast when it comes to the Sevens game. Given the success they've had in recent seasons, Ross, Chris, can we expect to see an invigorated American team at the World Cup next year?
You certainly hope that they can build on this. I mean, I don't recall a time that I've been a sports fan where there's as much interest in rugby as there is right now in America. I mean, it's certainly developed over the last 10 years. And every year we have it out in Las Vegas with the Sevens. So that's one of the, prime party spots to stop off on that tour as well. So, yeah, it would be nice to see them do well out in Japan, see if they can build on what they've been doing, you know, for the last, I guess, not only the last 12 months, I guess the last 2 years in rugby, they do have quite an amount of talent on the sevens side. Mm-hmm. Hasn't translated over to the union side yet, quite yet, but they're getting the big matchups. They get the big names. Of course, all these teams want to come over and play in America. We saw that earlier with the All Blacks, and we saw that with Ireland. So the buzz is certainly there, and you would hope with of a country that has 360 million some odd people, they might be able to field a rugby team. So I think within, you know, within the next half a dozen years, we might start seeing some more competitive sides on the, of course, with the seven side, and that maybe even on the union side, you might start seeing some upsets.
So looking ahead to 2019, Mark Archer, and hopefully this is me not just being a Northern Hemisphere snob, but I'm looking at the sort of the world of rugby at the moment. Seven seems to be in a good place. It seems that Gallagher Premiership, the Gallagher in investment in money, seems to have made that a better product at the moment. European rugby is in good fettle. We've seen through the cup competitions, also the money over in the top 14, some of the Italian teams coming into the fore and the Challenge Cup and other areas. Irish rugby seems to be in good fettle, as we've seen there. The Rugby Championship is, as always, supplying some great games. And yet Super Rugby seems to be something of a problem in the mix at the moment. Not at the top of the league of Super Rugby, at the end, at the beginning and the end, but all those games that go on in between where you've got people playing each other for nothing, really.
I guess Super Rugby's evolved over recent years, and they expanded it, so I think, to almost 18 teams, and then they've cut back to 15 again, and they lost the team from Western Australia, they lost the team from South Africa. And it's struggling a bit in many ways. And I think some of the problems are there's always a player drain to the Northern Hemisphere, whether it be to France or some players now going to Japan to play their rugby. So a lot of guys are transitioning. Australia, probably not big enough to support five professional teams. They made a decision to go to four. That caused all sorts of problems internally and has caused almost a little breakaway league now that's been structured out of Western Australia. And, yeah, as you say, it's been dominated by the New Zealand teams. So whilst the derby matches in New Zealand are great, if you're a New Zealand fan, you get a lot of it home and away. It doesn't quite, those traditional rivalries are fantastic on one hand. On the other hand, some of the teams don't play each other. And then some of the teams, there's quite a big gap between the top teams and the bottom teams. So we've seen the likes of the new Japanese expansion team struggle, but albeit got better this year. It took the Jaguares out of Argentina a number of years to really get up to speed, but they've improved now and knocked off and got some good scalps and started to win away from home. So it's been a regrowth period here, but again, it's been dominated by New Zealand teams. Then they get to the playoffs and the conferences, and everyone struggles to understand how teams get there, and then home advantage is so massive. So we see the likes of the Lions taking on the Crusaders as the finals been for the last couple of years, and it's extremely tough to travel from South Africa, from Johannesburg, for example, to Christchurch for a one-off match when you may have played a semi-final in Australia the week before or at home. So the playoff system's not great, but I think they're looking at that again. But again, the product at the top end is fantastic. The weather's good, that they played in summer conditions in South Africa, New Zealand, in Australia. So the pitches are good for the majority of the season. You see open, fast, free-flowing rugby. It's a great spectacle. So the product's okay. It's just trying to tweak it and keep everyone active, keep crowds coming in, which I think all the Super Rugby teams are struggling to fill the stadiums now.
Needs to be simplified ahead, especially going into a World Cup year, because there's going to be a clash, isn't there?
Absolutely. I think, and purely speaking from a South African perspective, I think there's too many teams in Super Rugby. I'd like to see the whole competition come down to 10 teams to make it more competitive. And to me, because the New Zealanders have been so dominant, I feel that Australia and South Africa need to regroup, that we basically got stronger teams to compete with those teams. Because what's happening now is, for example, in South Africa, you get the Free State Cheetahs taking on down a very watered-down Melbourne Rebels, and you get 5,000 people to the stadium, and that's not what people want to see. So I'm looking for a more strength versus strength type of competition. I feel South Africa should enter two teams maximum. New Zealand can have three, Australia two, and basically make it like the Super 10, like the competition started off for, that the whole league can be a lot more competitive. And then from a South African perspective, what I'd like to see them focus once again on is our domestic competition, the Currie Cup. I feel we're not putting enough emphasis on that. It's kind of losing its flair that it had over all those years. So to me, simplify the process that everybody can understand what the competition is, to Mark's point, where it comes to playoff and so forth, and less teams but a lot more competitive.
Rugby World Cup next year, 2019, mm-hmm. is going to be a massive opportunity for World Rugby and other authorities around the world to forward the game. We're seeing the growth of rugby over in Europe in a number of different countries as well. Qualification for this World Cup has been great as well. It seems that sort of grassroots rugby is in a good place at the moment, so we need it to be backed up by a competitive World Cup.
Absolutely, and Japan's a great place to have it. I think that result against South Africa in the last World Cup really dynamised the nation. It's going to enter a fever pitch for this World Cup, and it's going to be a real leveller having it in an environment where not many people have played rugby before. So we're looking forward to seeing some of the smaller nations be more competitive. And I think you see that. Georgia have always been knocking on the door. Romania for a while back, maybe not so much now. But, you know, Georgia have got some absolutely enormous chaps playing in the top 14, and they're really competitive. And I think to echo what Ross said about the sevens in American rugby, this is a shop window now. If Japan get it right, and they do all their sporting events fantastically, this might appeal to a whole new generation of rugby players around the world. So this could be the most important World Cup that we've ever had.
Just to make a point, though, you know, the end of year shindig for World Rugby wasn't completely dominated by the Irish. Yet they took home a lot of the titles. However, one title was retained by the All Blacks, and that was the try of the year. Brodie Retallick with this stunner. Let's hear Retallick's try.
That's the 22. And Retallick was entitled to come through.
That's right.
Brought it to the referee, and so a turnover. And now they'll look to make the play on the far side. Barrett on the inside. Bowden Barrett. Maddox makes the tackle on halfway.
There's no fullback for the Wallabies.
Short side, Goodhue. And now Ben Smith evades one. So good on the counter attack, the All Blacks. Borobedi in a bit of trouble on the far side, but it's now Anton Leonard Brown.
Wallabies down to 14 men for Lau, has just left the field.
Quick hands, here's Retallick, throws it dummy! Retallick running like an outside back, his fourth test try. What a dummy!
A lot of chat about the likes of Barrett, the likes of Sexton. Retallick's had a great season, hasn't he?
Yeah, he missed the start of the season with injury, and it probably gave him some extra sort of levels of fitness and stamina come the end of the season. He was a bit fresher than a lot of players. But yeah, I mean, one of the things that sort of defined All Blacks rugby in the last, the last two World Cup campaigns and reigns is the close handling ability of the tight forwards, which has really been a difference between, I think, New Zealand and the rest of all the teams in world rugby. Other teams are starting to catch up now, but to be able to catch and pass, which sounds very simple for a rugby player, under pressure in close quarter situations has really been one of the difference between the tight five players of New Zealand and the rest of the world. And that just allows other players to do their job. It gives them the chance for players, big physical players, to get mismatches out wide against smaller players. And the skills of Retallick to throw a dummy, and then I think he ran over from the 22 uncontested with about three All Blacks around him, really summed up his skill set. So when you see lock forwards not just doing the line out work and pushing in the scrum when the clean outs around the rucks and mauls, when you actually get busy and get the ball in hand and make damage and get over the gain line, it's fantastic to see. But a lot of teams are starting to do that now. A lot of teams are starting to really upskill their tight forwards, which just means that they've got different weapons, the different ways of hurting teams, whereas traditionally, you know, the forwards do what they have to do and the backs do what they have to do.
Johnny Sexton, player of the year 15s, Perry Baker, player of the year 7s at the end of season bash. So that was 2018, now 2019, as we did with the football just a few moments ago. Let's go with the rugby as well. 2019 champions in Japan. When is it? It's September, October sort of time?
Final is November the 2nd, so it's most of October. Starts at the start of October, maybe the end of September.
Yeah.
But final is November the 2nd in Yokohama.
So who gets crowned champion November the 2nd? Second next year?
I'm gonna stick my neck out here. I think the All Blacks going to the tournament as a favourite, but I'm gonna go for Ireland.
Ireland for you?
You know the answer to this already, Tom. It's England.
England for you?
I'm gonna go for the three-peat with the All Blacks, of course.
All Blacks for you?
I don't go against the All Blacks, so I'm gonna go with the Kiwis and trust that Mark Archer will get that squad ready to raise the championship trophy there.
as host, I infect my privilege of not being, well, not having to predict anything.
Scotland not going to do it, Tom?
Scotland are not going to do it. I can make that prediction if you want. Yeah, that's fine. They might have a nice trip down under, though, and get some nice souvenirs along the way.
And a tan.
And they will be good for the tournament. I think that's the way to look at it. But one thing that was intriguing about that end-of-year bash for World Rugby, Johnny Sexton lost his voice ahead of that one. I don't know if it had anything to do with the night before or anything like that, but he lost his voice. And then Retallick was not there to pick up his try of the year trophy as well. So that honour went to Bowden Barrett, who picked up the try of the year on behalf of the All Blacks.
And to announce the winner of the International Rugby Players Try of the Year, please welcome one of the highest try scorers of all time. It is the great Brian Habana.
Your Serene Highness, ladies and gentlemen, the winner of the International Rugby Players Try of the Year award is Brody Retallick.
To accept the award on his behalf, would you please welcome to the stage Bowden Barrett. Just tell us what it's like from your perspective as one of the more graceful players in the game right now to see Brody running wild with the wind in his hair in those wide open spaces.
Yeah, that was the early days of his mullet too, so it's come a long way since then, but it just shows the skill level of the forwards these days. Doddy will be proud of the way he is running around. You know, the big boys are required to pass the ball and run, you know, a lot, so he's a top player.
You scored four of your own against the Wallabies. I know Geordie scored four yesterday, your brother Cross Scott as well. We can change the name and you can add it to your collection. I promise you we're amongst friends. We won't tell Brody if you don't want to.
Nah, it's all good, mate. This is for him. Cheers.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Full-time over in the Serie A, and it is Lazio taking the points, all the points against Cagliari, so congratulations to they. Cagliari for their point, did pull one back. Pedro with a penalty on 93 minutes, finished 3-1 in that particular game. Real Betis still leading Eibar over in Spain. What's happening in the Premier League? CVR's watching this one for us.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you is it's been a second-half kickoff at the Emirates, but it's the first-half goal from Arsenal. They are still leading against Burnley 1-0.
Yeah, 70 minutes on the clock. Real Betis taking on Eibar over in La Liga. Keep an eye on those ones for you, as we are all things US sport.
Yeah, that's right. Let's recap back going back to last week in the NFL. Last week was week 15, and boy, did we have some good scores coming out there. Yes, Carl?
Was that the Miami touchdown, the greatest touchdown of all touchdowns?
Yeah, Miami putting on some miracle. That was actually week 14 against the New England Patriots.
My apologies.
Yeah, but they were certainly celebrating in South Beach after Tom Brady collapsed again, once again in South Florida. But the big game, do we have a goal on there, Carl? Yes, we do have a goal.
We do have a goal, and it is once again Aubameyang. A fantastic goal by the Arsenal number 14. As I say, coming across the box, striking it from outside, and Joe Hart, like most of the season, sitting and wondering where it all went wrong. 47 minutes played. Arsenal 2, Burnley 0.
Breaking away from the NFL, looking at the AFC West right now, probably the two best teams in football sit in the AFC West. The Kansas City Chiefs, the Los Angeles Chargers, they sit at 11-3. And last week in week 15, they were the late night game on that Thursday night game, and the Chargers defeated the Chiefs 29-28. Phillip Rivers threw for 313 yards, had two touchdowns. Justin Jackson had 16 carries for 58 yards. And the ageless wonder, 38 years old, Antonio Gates, was carrying the way for the Chargers in that big win.
Antonio, this is the loudest place to play football in the world, and right now it feels like a funeral. What just happened?
I mean, you're talking about a group of guys that are constantly fighting throughout four quarters. Can't say enough about this unit and what we was able to do today here in a hostile environment. Yeah! I'm just happy that we got the win, and it's time to move on.
What do you say about Phillip Rivers ultimately connecting on that final play?
That's, to me, that's a staple of who he is. A guy that continued to fight with grit and hard work. And you can see he was just so determined for us to try to get this win, and he led us to a victory today.
As a result of this win, everything remains on the table, not only the division, but also the number one seed. What does this win mean in the macro, in the long term for this team?
Well, it obviously, it's put us in a position to get one of our short-term goals, which is to win the division. And that's what we're looking forward to right now. We're trying to constantly creep and trying to win a division. We knew this was a good team. You know, I can't say enough, man. It's just about these guys continuing to fight. And now we're in a position to try to win our division.
How are you so calm right now?
I don't know, man. I've been around for a long time, so I'm a veteran. And I just know this. The big picture, it still remains to be seen. I just know we just got to continue to stay focused at, you know, at task at hand, which is trying to win a division and then, you know, fortunate to get into the postseason.
There you have it. That's Antonio Gates, the tight end there for the Los Angeles Chargers Hall of Famer. First ballot Hall of Famers, certainly. And the Los Angeles Chargers are in first place. They're taking on the Baltimore Ravens. This one will be going on at the Stubhead Center in Carson, California. This one will be at 5:20 a.m. GST. As we're joined by Grill alumnus from all over the globe, and we have some special friends as well joining us on the show. We will literally put anyone on the radio today. If you come down to Barasti and join us up the rooftop garden, or just text us at 4001. Elsewhere, back to the NFL, the Washington Redskins are fighting for their playoff hopes at Nissan Stadium in Nashville, Tennessee, taking on the Tennessee Titans. The Titans open up at 10.5-point favorites, the largest favorites heading into Week 16. Josh Johnson leads the Washington Redskins, who are fighting for their playoff hopes on the 33-year-old legs of Adrian Peterson, who has 923 yards on the ground this year for them and seven scores. The Bengals take on cross-state rival the Browns. The Browns sit at 6-7-1. Believe it or not, they still have playoff hopes out there in Cleveland. If Baker Mayfield can get them to the playoffs, they need to keep winning this weekend. That will be at First Energy Stadium in Cleveland, Ohio. The Cowboys host the Buccaneers. Dak Prescott and company are hoping to improve on their 8-6 record as they got shut out last week by the Indianapolis Colts. The Vikings take on the Lions in Detroit. Vikings need to win to keep their playoff hopes alive. The Giants take on the Colts. Odell Beckham will not be in uniform for the Giants for their third straight week with a hamstring injury. Andrew Luck and the Colts hope to improve upon last week's big win over the Dallas Cowboys in Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, Indiana. The Jacksonville Jaguars take on Carl's Miami Dolphins. And for Carl to be happy here again in the new year, the Dolphins need to win. Ryan Tannehill needs to win in Miami Gardens, Florida at Hard Rock Stadium. They sit at 7-7, Carl. If they don't win, they're not going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, it's a tough one to ask for the Dolphins. But, Ross, they have been blowing hot and cold this week. And I think if Tannehill can bring some consistency to them, look, we know what they can do. That win against the Patriots was absolutely massive for them. But I think consistency is now the key. Must win game to get into the playoffs.
Must win game. And they're without their future Hall of Famer, Frank Gore, who's going to be sidelined with an ankle injury. So they're going to be relying on Kenyon Drake and see if he can get it done in the backfield for them. They have had a two-headed monster in that backfield in South Beach. But now it's just going to be a one-man show with Kenyon Drake, with Gore being sidelined.
Good news for us is the game is in South Beach, as you said, at the Hard Rock Stadium. So expecting big things from the boys, as I say, in this must-win game against the Jaguars.
Elsewhere in that division, in Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts, it's the lowly Buffalo Bills behind rookie Josh Allen at 5-9, taking on Tom Brady and the New England Patriots, who sit at first place right now in the division at 9-5 after getting beat last week in my hometown at Heinz Field against those Pittsburgh Steelers. However, some sad and troubling news came out of New England this week with yet another suspension for the troubled wide receiver Josh Gordon.
Just on yesterday's news, I spoke with Josh yesterday morning, as I have several times since he's been here. You know, it's obviously an unfortunate situation, and personally, I wish him the very best, as we all do on this team. You know, he's made a statement, the organization's made a statement, the league's made a statement. I've spoken at him at length over the last 3 months, and so I don't really have anything at this point to add to that private matter, and hope that he's able to deal with it successfully. So otherwise, we're moved on to Buffalo, and big challenge ahead of us on Sunday. Today will be a big day for us, and we need to make the most of it and be ready to go.
Bill Belichick should have put a patent on, "We're moving on to fill in the blank our next opponent," because he says that at the end of every single news conference, and boy, does he sound more morose as he keeps coaching. I'll tell you what, the Green Bay Packers take on the New York Jets in the Big Apple. We're not even going to care about that game because either of these teams will make it to the playoffs. However, Aaron Rodgers will be playing for the Packers, who are eliminated from the playoffs and looking for a new head coach, as they're coached right now by interim coach Philbin. And the Houston Texans take on the Eagles. Eagles are hoping for some Nick Foles magic. Nick Foles, Super Bowl MVP, he's back at the starting quarterback. quarterback position. They sit at 7-7. He dialed in some magic last week, and they're hoping he can do it again. They actually put up a Nick Foles shrine in the locker room with some candles and some old pictures of it, and in hopes that they have some good juju going into Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The Falcons take on the Panthers. No big game there, as both of them are eliminated from the playoffs. The Rams take on the Cardinals. This should be a walkthrough for the Rams. The Cardinals only have won 3 wins this season. Bears at 49ers. That's going to be a big game. Mitchell Trubisky going for the Bears. They're at 10-4. 49ers sit at 4-10. This is a much win for them. They're playing this one at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California, right in the heart of San Francisco, who might be getting another team next year. Oakland Raiders are considering leaving Oakland and bailing out on their plan to go to Vegas instead of heading to San Francisco. So we'll see how that one develops, Carl.
Can you please update us on that story? Because isn't the Raiders suing Oakland, or Oakland suing the Raiders at this moment in time?
So the city of Oakland is suing the owner of the Raiders, which kind of baffles me, because they want them to stay there. And it seems like, why would you sue them then? It's almost like paying for a friend. I just can't wrap my head around that. But yeah, so here's what's happening right now. The owner of the Raiders wants a new stadium, and because Oakland is the only team in North American professional sports that shares a baseball field with the football field, and that's why you see the baseball diamond on the football field. Players don't like it; it looks bad. Oakland can't sell tickets. The whole entire top of the stadium, there's no one ever there. So, move to Vegas. We've seen that the Vegas ice hockey team is doing quite well. The Las Vegas Golden Knights, they want to move to Vegas. There's a big sports community in Vegas. It would be a big ticket in town. So that was the original plan. But now there's some cracks falling through in that plan. So they might look at some alternative locations. One of the alternative locations, move across the bay. Come to San Francisco. San Francisco would possibly house 2 teams. People are rich enough in San Francisco to certainly buy 2 teams tickets. So that might happen. We'll see where this one develops. Elsewhere, the Steelers go to the Saints. They're going to play this one in Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Ben Roethlisberger and company hope to improve on last week's big win over the New England Patriots. The Saints are sitting at 12-2 behind Drew Brees. He's putting together an MVP caliber season. However, their offense has sputtered just a little bit the last couple years. The Chiefs head to Seattle and CenturyLink Field in Seattle, Washington. Patrick Mahomes hopes to continue his magic, his 45 touchdowns he has this year in the northwest part of Washington. And the Broncos host the Raiders. Raiders sit at 3-11, coached by John Gruden, who came out of the broadcast booth to come on down. They're hoping they could get more than 3 wins out of him. The Broncos sit at 6-8 this season. So that will be a playoff-less game between 2 teams. And that's where we're at right now with the NFL. Switching speeds over to the NBA. Some scores to report on. The Hornets beat the Pistons 98-86. The Raptors beat the Cavs 126-110. The Pacers beat the Nets 114-106. Victor Oladipo had 26 points in this one. And one of the big games out here was the Milwaukee Bucks defeating the Boston Celtics 120-107. Giannis Antetokounmpo had 30 points and 8 rebounds in this big game.
I think talent wise we're better, and obviously this year our offense, it's way different. We're playing better defensively, and we've had some pieces in the team, Brooke, Pat, and other guys, Urson, that help this team become great.
They are certainly hungry. The Bucks are playing very good, sitting at 22-19 in first place in the East. Elsewhere in the East, the Bulls going through a transitional stage for their franchise. Won last night against the Orlando Magic. Lauri Markkanen had 32 points and posterized Nikola Vucevic with his 19 points and 19 rebounds. But if you haven't seen this one, get on YouTube, fans. Look up Markkanen posterizing Vucevic underneath the rim. It was a big one. The Bulls won 90-80. In that game, the Timberwolves lost to a Spurs team that jacked up 10 threes. That's right, 10 threes in the first half. Spurs won 124-98. Covington had 13 points for Minnesota in a losing effort. The Jazz beat the Trailblazers 120-90. Spaniard Ricky Rubio had 24 points, 2 rebounds, and 8 assists in the big win. The Kings, surprising a lot of people in the Queen City, won 102-99 over the Grizzlies. Mike Conley had 23 points in a losing effort. Buddy Held from the Bahamas had 28 points and 8 rebounds. It was found out this week that Buddy Held is actually 26 years old. And the whole entire career, everyone else thought he was 25 years old. So there's a lot of eyebrows being raised right now in California about why he's being labeled as a 25-year-old when he's actually 26. So we'll look into that one and we'll have more of a development for you when we get Beld's passport, as Donald Trump would probably like to do. The Los Angeles Lakers won the late game 112-104. Well, who else? LeBron James had 22 points, 12 rebounds, and 14 assists. A triple-double for the King, who came out earlier this week and said, well, he'd like to play against New Orleans. He'd like to play with New Orleans Pelicans power forward Anthony Davis. It created quite a stir in the NBA community.
You made comments about another team's players.
So what did I do?
You made comments about.
But what did I do? Was it right or wrong?
I'm asking you your opinion. Are you surprised by how much reaction it generated?
Of course not. Anything I say would generate something.
Did you know that when you said it? Did you?
No.
You just said it and then realized.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant. Ask me right now.
Would you like to play with Kevin?
Absolutely. Ask me if I like to play with Jimmy Butler. Say it right now. Ask me about Kyrie Irving, Giannis. Ask me about Embiid, Ben Simmons. Go ahead, all of them. Luka Doncic. Ask me right now. Come on, guys. It's not rocket science. It's not rocket science. These are great players. Absolutely. You know, I would love to play with a lot of great players. That's just who I am. People get caught up in, you know, get caught up in bunches, you know, sometimes when they wish they can control what you say and they can't control me at all. And I play by the rules.
I want to bring my two friends back into the conversation here, Tom and Carl, and kind of paint the picture for him. LeBron James, certainly the biggest global icon when it comes to the world of basketball right now, coming out before he starts his game and says the player on the other team who's about to be a free agent and who can pick his team next year, he says, I want to play with him next year. A lot of it, this created a lot of stir in the NBA, and let me tell you why. Because there's this thing called collusion that they have in the NBA, and they have in many sports leagues, where you can't tamper with current players on another team. And a lot of NBA GMs are saying, LeBron, if this was any other player, no one would care. But they're saying, because LeBron James is who he is, the Lakers should face a fine for this, and they should maybe possibly lose draft picks in next year's draft because LeBron James has such a presence, not only in the NBA, but in the world community. So, Carl, Tom, did LeBron overstep his boundaries by saying he wants to play with a competitor?
Leave the man alone, because that comes back to my point a little bit earlier. If you're allowing Pogba to tweet about selling jerseys for your club, I'm sure LeBron James, so you can use him for a bit of recruitment.
Yeah, I think they did leave him alone, because I don't think I've ever heard a more timid reporter at a press conference. LeBron, do you mind if I ask this question? I won't ask that question, if that's all right. You asked me this question. Okay, I'll ask you that question, that's all right, it's all right, David.
I think LeBron was doing the interview with himself after a while.
It's just, he knows what he's doing. He absolutely knows. If he puts something out there, people are going to pick that up and run with it. And here we're over here in the middle of the desert talking about LeBron's comments in Dubai. I mean, what a powerful force to just say, yeah, I'd like to play with that guy. You know, if even if Pogba comes out and says, you know, I'd like to maybe play with Ozil, does it garner this type of attention? I don't think so.
My question is, though, do you see him in a Lakers jersey coming his free agency?
Well, Anthony Davis, he can sign a 5-year Supermax contract to stay in New Orleans, and he can get the most amount of money. As we have a goal, Burnley has struck.
Have they got enough time?
What do we have there?
It is. We'll get the goal scorer for you as soon as it is being confirmed to us. But they get one back. It's been a tetchy old affair, this one. 62 minutes on the clock, so there's still plenty of time left in this game. And Burnley well and truly back in the game as well. Horrific defending from Arsenal, just not clearing their lines. A real ping-pong effect of the ball right in the danger area. Arsenal unable to clear it, unable to get a boot on ball as it comes back for the Burnley player, Barnes, who gets the goal at the last minute there, but rather something of a gift from Burnley. So Burnley have pulled one back. It's Arsenal 2, Burnley 1.
Yeah, you have it there in that Burnley game. We're going to get you all the updates there as they enter the 63rd minute. But do we get Anthony Davis in a Lakers jersey? I don't think so, Carl. I think he stays down in there in New Orleans. I think he's happy down south.
Thanks so much indeed, Roscoe. Let's take a short break. When we come back, more sport.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You listen to Dubai Eye 103.8. It's The Grill. It's a little bit cold. We're up here live on the rooftop garden, so do get yourself down here and be part of our final show of the season. So come on down here with rooftop garden, enjoying our final show, and of course enjoying the sights and the sounds as well. Get your thoughts in to us. Text them to us now on 4001. What's happening in the rugby? Let's get the latest from Carlos van Roosendaal.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you is one kickoff in the top 14 is Agen taking on Stade Français. 20 minutes played and the scoreboard is still 0-0.
We have got 2-1 score on the doors for you at the moment. Arsenal taking on Burnley in that particular game at the moment. Just a quick reminder that Lazio taking the points a little earlier on. We've got Chelsea against Leicester for you live from 7 o'clock and then Cardiff entertaining Manchester United from 9:30 this evening. Both these games live on Dubai Eye 103.8, so make sure you stay tuned for those a little later on in proceedings. Let's go to the world of cricket for you now, because cricket being played across the globe. Big Bash is throwing up some great results at the moment. There is more Big Bash cricket for you a little later on. With regards to live cricket, international T20 match taking place between Bangladesh and the West Indies. West Indies were 190 all out from 19.2 overs. Bangladesh, in response, are 78 for the loss of 4 wickets. 113 runs to win from 13 overs. So we'll keep an eye on that one for you. In terms of cricket, being a good one, what about for you in South African cricket this year? It's been a positive year for South African cricket?
Yeah, I think it has, Tom. I think, you know, South African cricket now, the big thing for them is they need to establish themselves in the competitions. You know, I know we all know what happened in that Australian Test Series in South Africa with the suspension of those 3 players, but I think that was a very, very important victory for us. But I think the big thing for South African eyes in any of these World Cup competitions, we need to become a more consistent team. But other than that, I think they can be quite happy with the results that they've achieved this year.
How has the year of cricket been for you? Obviously, Virat Kohli has been one of the standout players of the season. And interesting to see him and his Australian counterpart going nose-to-nose and chin-to-chin in the last latest test match between the two countries. Also, a year, well, certainly from an English point of view, that's been dominated by some breakthrough performances. Sam Curran has been a revelation in many formats of the game. But it's also a year that England cricket said farewell to one of its standard bearers. Much hints and suggestions doing the rounds at the moment that Alistair Cook will be knighted in the New Year's honours list at the end of the year. So he could well be Sir Alistair Cook. At the meantime, though, he's still chef to his teammates.
He's a stalwart of English cricket. What he's achieved has been phenomenal.
He's made runs all over the world. He's just a shining example for every young player.
Well, let's be honest, with a technique like that, it's incredible that he's got to 10 test matches. But it's an incredible achievement. You know, he's had an amazing run and he's really been a rock at the top of the order for England for many years.
Clipped away very nicely. Sean was down there. Comes back, comes racing back for the two that bring him his double hundreds. Alistair Cook celebrating yet again.
And he looks fit and strong, raring to go again. And what do? The coaches have said, just take guard and start again. Magical figures. 200 not out. He's greedy, he'd like a lot more.
This is it, this is how it all started. When you were a nipper, just flicking it through mid-wicket. Probably had the pull shot back then, but just dinked over mid-wicket. This is where it all started. Well done, tremendous achievement.
Unbelievable effort, mate, well done. What do you reckon, Wilf?
Boring!
Boring, boring cookie!
Boring!
Love you, mate, see you soon.
Oh, this might be it. Cook flirts into the leg side, the ball trickles over. And he's got there at long last, 10,000 test match runs for Alistair Cook.
Well, he'll be the first Englishman to do it, so it's a fantastic achievement. He'll be only the second opener, I think. Sunil Gavaskar is the other one, so the rest of the 10,000 club are all middle-order players. It's a much easier position to bat in middle-order, it's tougher at the top.
Your determination, your hunger, your willingness to fight, your desire, your stubbornness, those are the traits that have really got you to 10,000 runs, and those are the traits that have made you an unbelievable player for England.
squirted away in the air, but there is no gully, and it's another misfield. So a big beaming smile from Alistair Cook.
Huge powers of concentration.
Yeah, the person that he is, obviously a great bloke off the field, but you know, a lot of blood, sweat and tears into 150 test matches. It's an incredible achievement, and you know, obviously just delighted for him.
I just feel so privileged and honoured to have played in the same team as him, play under him, and now be fortunate enough to captain him.
Only now, for the first time, just a slight sign of weariness as he heads up those steps, that he can be a very, very proud man.
Yeah, 2018 been a significant one for Alistair Cook and England cricket. It's been a significant one for Indian cricket and, of course, Australian cricket for all the wrong reasons. Thankfully, though, we're seeing those two teams competing in a very competitive series at the moment. I highlighted that little sort of tete-a-tete between Virat Kohli and Tim Payne, his opposite number, in this latest test match, which sets things up nicely for the Boxing Day test match over in Melbourne at the MCG. It's one apiece at the moment. And there's a bit of feeling between the teams.
Captains engage again.
Banter between both Australia's and India's skipper carried on into the fourth day of the second test.
Well, I know he's your captain, but you can't seriously lock him as a player.
Both Tim Payne and Virat Kohli had words to say, continuing on from this exchange that ended day three's play.
Finish. The verbal volleys continue. Little thumbs up from Virat. So.
After the two found themselves in close quarters at the non-striker's end, the conversation continued in front of umpire Chris Gaffney.
Still a little bit going on between the two skippers.
Keep your cool, Virat.
Umpire now stepping in.
Payne was eager to call out there was nothing malicious in the discussion.
You guys are the captains.
I didn't have a conversation.
No swearing.
Before just balls later, the two came within millimetres of each other after a single.
Still this tension continues to simmer.
Kohli would have the first laugh. Payne removed just after lunch by Mohammad Shami.
Oh, that is a fierce delivery and taken.
Well, and the Indians are carrying on with it to Tim Payne, but that was a brute of a delivery.
Though the keeper would have the last laugh. Kohli falling for 17 in India's fourth innings chase.
Usman Khawaja takes the catch. The massive wicket of Virat Kohli. Huge moment for the Australians in the test match.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.